Welcome to the IonaHoops.com podcast with your host, Guy Flotico.
Hey now, it's season 3, episode 32 of the IonaHoops.com podcast. We're entering the summer stretch run and soon a conclusion to season 3 here on the pod. But whoa there, still lots to come over the next few weeks. And this episode is no exception as we welcome in yet another pair of experts to give us scouts on a couple new gales. Meanwhile, I'm going to give you a couple of Iona Iotas. The Iona Athletics golf outing is upon us once again, coming up next Monday, June 5th. In recent years, some of the regulars on IonaHoops.com message board have pooled funds to sponsor the beverage cart at the outing. No funny jokes about beer, people. And yeah, we're doing it again. If you want to contribute, you can email me at generichoopfan@yahoo.com. You can DM me on Twitter or the message board, or you can reach out to me any other way you know how to reach out to me. No amount is too small. As a reminder, I do not personally benefit from this in any way. I just pool the funds and send it to Iona, and the IonaHoops.com message board banner is turned into signage that's stuck on the beverage cart. It's just a nice way to let Iona Athletics know we are here to support them. So please reach out to me and give me what you can. Then give it to Iona Athletics in the name of IonaHoops.com.
Iona.
Speaking of supporting Iona, did you guys get in those down payments for your season tickets yet? You'll want to if you haven't, because season ticket holders will be invited to an event later this summer with coaches Tobin Anderson and Angelica Schumillo. Get that deposit in right away so you can be part of the event, which figures to happen somewhere around early to mid-August, I'm hearing. I have spent in-person time with both coaches, and they just get you fired up. You know, they're both pumped up. They're both willing to talk your ear off about the season. They're just great people, really. So we're heading toward another fun fall and winter in New Rochelle. So get your juices flowing now, like mine are, and just see if you can get to that event. And the way to do that is to get that deposit in for your tickets, so you can hang out with the coaches down the line.
Iona.
Even though we haven't heard a ton about the non-conference schedule, I'm hearing it's a lot closer to being finalized than you'd think. I know I say this all the time, but as we know, things are not final until the ink dries on the contracts. But here's what we do know about the non-conference slate at this time. The biggest name on the slate is Colorado, and we'll be playing at Colorado on Sunday, November 26th. This is the only specific date that has been publicly announced, though I'm sure for some of these other games I'll be listing, we have dates just that haven't been announced yet. I'm going to start with something that seems very close to being set, even though it has not been announced. Iona apparently is going to be playing in an 8-team mid-major MTE event in Florida, the Gulf Coast Showcase. Hard to pin down who else is in that. There's been some rumors. There's a couple of websites that actually have some teams listed, but those same teams' message boards are suggesting those teams are not in said event. So I think we're just going to have to wait and see. But it is a mid-major tournament. We'll have three games. And a three-game event like that against other good mids, followed by a date at Colorado, is really going to level set us as we work toward that first weekend in December against MAC competition. So there's that. And those three games in that MTE tournament would be the 3 days right before Thanksgiving, if the dates that I'm told are correct. Anyway, here's what else we know. We'll be taking on St. Joe's at UBS Arena. Don't have a date for that. Some people have thrown around the idea that it could be the same day that St. John's is playing Hofstra at UBS, which I believe is during that week between Christmas and New Year's. I have not heard that, seen that. It's very possible it's true, but I have not heard anything about it. So we'll have to wait and see. We're going to be home against Hofstra, and we'll be at Harvard. Those dates are not settled. We are starting a home and home on the road against a really strong mid-major program. It's going to be a lot of fun. And again, I'm not allowed to say who, because, you know, as soon as I say who it is, that means it'll fall through and we won't be playing it. So I'll just leave it at that. It's going to be a really fun opponent, and we'll be starting that one on the road this year. We're also going to be hosting a couple of bye games as well, including, rumor has it, our season opener, maybe even game two as well. So we'll have to see if that's how things start off, but it's looking like that's the case. And there should be one more game in there as well, but I have not heard anything about that last game. So we'll have to wait and see how that shakes out. But again, waiting for the dates to fill in, waiting for the contracts to get settled, and then you'll see an announcement. But from what I'm hearing, we're pretty close to being set. So normally we get our non-conference schedule in August. So I think there's a chance we might have it in June sometime. So we'll see. But anyway, stay tuned here and on the Anna message board for updates. All right. So things are still quiet in the recruiting end as a dead period is just wrapping up. So we'll bypass those podcast features that I usually do, and we're going to get right to our guests. We're going to begin with Benjamin Rosenberg. He's a Dartmouth beat writer for the Valley News of New Hampshire and Vermont. He's seen a lot of Cam Krzyzewiak. And then we're going to welcome sports writer Chris Boyle of the Daytona Beach News Journal. He covered Stetson and Wizapanzo for that paper this season. So let's hear what these guys have to say about two of our newest gales. One of the more intriguing recruits we've brought in is transfer Cam Krzyzewiak, a 6'9 forward from Dartmouth with 2 years eligibility remaining. Last season, Cam played 18 minutes per game for the Big Green, averaging 4.9 points, 3.2 rebounds, while shooting 50% from the floor, overall 42.3% from three. So he's truly a stretch four, or is he? And here to tell us a bit more about Cam, we have Benjamin Rosenberg, sports writer for the Valley News in New Hampshire and Vermont, and he saw a good amount of Cam this season. Benjamin, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Dartmouth didn't have a great season last year. They were 10-18 overall, 6-8, though, in the tough Ivy League. Just looking at the numbers for the team, it looked like Cam was part of a solid front court rotation for a really deep Dartmouth team. Can you tell us about the overall makeup of the team, the kind of system they were playing, and just give us a feel for what his role was?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Dartmouth had a lot of new faces this year. The previous year, they had lost guys like Brendan Berry and Aaron Rye from the team in 2021-22. They got off to a really rough start in non-conference play. Were really struggling, especially on the offensive end. And then the switch kind of flipped when they got into Ivy League action, lost to a really tough Cornell team at home in their opener. Then, you know, they won at Yale for the first time in quite a while, had a solid win over Penn, and then grinded one out against Harford. And in fact, going into the second half of conference play, they were 4-3 in the league. And there was kind of a real interesting narrative around them for the first time in a while, because, you know, the Ivy League tournament had only been established a few years prior with four teams, and Dartmouth since then they'd never made it. They did end up fading down the stretch, lost five of their final seven, but they had a win at home over Princeton, and honestly should have beaten them on the road twice. They shouldn't beat them on the road at well, lost that game in overtime. So I mean, that's a team obviously that went on a run in the NCAA tournament, made it to the Sweet 16, and Dartmouth beat them once and should have swept them. And Krzyzewiak was a part of that. He started just about every game down the stretch. Actually, it looks like he started every single game in Ivy League play, and had some of his best shooting performances late in the year.
Okay, so it looks like the front court was pretty deep here. It looked like four guys really split most of the time, including Cam in there. Can you tell us about the makeup of those four guys?
Yeah, well Dame Adelican, he was more of a true center. He'd be undersized at around 6'8 for a center in most conferences, but in the Ivy League, he really fit right in. He really came into his own as a senior. He actually transferred as well to Loyola Chicago. He had a 40-point game against Columbia, some other big games down the stretch as well. At least when he wasn't in foul trouble, he was definitely their most effective scorer and rebounder. Dusan Neskovic is kind of mainly a three, I would say, but another guy who could shoot, dealt with an injury early on in the year. Brandon Mitchell Day, a freshman, I didn't even realize he was 6'8 for a little while, but he was often the first one off the bench, and it was frequently Cam that he was replacing. I think Dartmouth is very high on him. So it was really the three of them plus Krzyzewiak who, took the majority of minutes in the front court there.
So Adelican looked like your typical back to the basket type of player. Was Krzyzewiak often paired with him as kind of like the countermeasure?
Early on, yes. Early on in games, I should say, not early on in the season. I mean, Dame definitely was a guy like who, you know, sometimes he just found himself wide open from, you know, on the top of the key and decided to shoot a three. But it certainly wasn't his game. Whereas with Cam, I mean, it looks like maybe even the majority of his attempts certainly. Let's see, yeah, he had 52 3-point attempts out of 90 field goal attempts in total. So yeah, the majority of his field goal attempts were from three. And you know, he was very effective too. Percentage wise, he was quite strong. His freshman year, he was out with an injury, which is why he still has 2 years of eligibility remaining for Iona. And then sophomore year was canceled because of COVID. So he's really only played 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, his junior year, he started just once. Small sample size, but he was pretty accurate from behind the arc. And then, yeah, in the small spurts, he played as a senior. He was, again, quite effective there, and he could also defend at multiple levels and made some nice plays off the inbound.
Okay. So I keep labeling him as a stretch four, and I'm guessing that's fair just by the way he shoots the three. But does he have some ability to play back to the basket?
I think he does. I mean, it's certainly not his specialty. And I think maybe with Iona, given that they've got some size, maybe that's not something he's going to need to do a whole lot, at least this next season. But I think he is capable. They have found him down in the paint off inbound plays in front of the basket quite a few times. He was effective in that role. But I think another thing I'll say that maybe helps him find those openings is he's just a smart player. Obviously, an Ivy Leaguer, you're going to expect that. But he's just got a lot of intelligence around the game, which makes sense given that, you know, his dad, Larry Krystowiak, played 9 years in the NBA and then was a college coach for a long time, mostly at Utah. He just has a really good understanding of the game, and he was one of the captains, I'm pretty sure. And in the interviews post game, he always was quite thoughtful.
You know, it's funny. I do a lot of these interviews with folks such as yourself, trying to learn more about our incoming guys. And I think I've heard, you know, the words, you know, intelligent player, high IQ player, about every player that we've brought in. I think it was like, it's just a Tobin Anderson prerequisite. You have to know what you're doing out there if you're going to play for him. So I'm curious to see how Cam will fit into that. So I don't know how much you know about Iona, but you know, we lost when Rick Pitino left, we've lost basically the entire roster with the exception of our rail thin 7-foot center, Oz Shema, who is a stretch five in every sense of the word. Now I'm just picturing we have a stretch four and a stretch five. Can you see that working in any scenario from what you know about Krystowiak's game?
I mean, I don't know how much they'll be on the court at the same time. I'm guessing Cam will probably come off the bench for a team like the Gales, who, you know, they've just been at or near the top of their conference for the last several years. But he'll definitely have a role on the bench. He wouldn't have come into the program if he wasn't going to be playing at all. So I think, yeah, he could definitely be one of the first two guys off the bench. I think maybe if you've got a 7-footer who doesn't have a lot of, you know, who's definitely more of a skinnier guy, maybe he's someone who, like, you know, probably won't play more than 25 or so minutes a game. I'm not sure. Maybe he will. But there's definitely going to be a role for Cam there. I don't think it's going to be as a five because he's not so much of a back to the basket type of player. But he's definitely, as you've been saying, a guy who can stretch the floor, score at multiple levels, and also defend at multiple levels.
Yeah, well, tell us while we're on that. Tell us a bit more about his game. What kind of can he be somebody that you put as almost like a point forward out there? Is he that kind of a passer?
I mean, in terms of assists, I don't think his numbers were anything stellar. But. Or about running point. I mean, he certainly didn't have to do that very often. But I mean, he certainly has good court vision, and probably, you know, given his size, is probably, you know, an above average passer for someone of his height, I would say.
Okay. And so is Shema. I'm picturing almost like a high low kind of look, but I can almost feel like both guys might move well without the ball. To the point where, you know, there's no real post up guy on this roster, at least it doesn't appear to be. So it'd be fun to see us in a lot doing a lot of motion kind of stuff where these guys are cutting and you know, high, like a little high low game between players like this. It would be, especially with both of them having the ability to step out and shoot a three. So it could be fun. Any other facets of his game you think we should be aware of? I mean, if somebody who's watched him, maybe something that doesn't show up in the stat sheet.
I mean, I mentioned the intelligence. I think that definitely comes through in a lot of different ways. Whether it's, you know, off the court in practice or just the energy he provides on the bench, you know, some things that maybe can't always be measured, but you know, he'll be a good fit there, I think, and maybe in a program that has a bit more of a rich history of, you know, competing in the postseason, maybe he'll feed off that energy somewhat as well. And obviously with a coach who's coming in new, but also, you know, it was a hot commodity after what he accomplished with Fairleigh Dickinson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as someone who's seen him play and has seen the type of guy he is, and again, you've heard him in press conferences and all of that, why in your mind will Iona fans love him?
I mean, pretty much everything I just said, his intelligence, his basketball IQ, everything he'll bring around the game. I mean, he's a coach's kid, so he's been around the game his entire life. He's moved around a bit. He's listed as being from San Diego, but he did a post-grad year at Northfield Mount Hermon, a pretty well-known prep yep. school in Massachusetts.
Yep.
And obviously was in high school in Utah because of his dad working there in Salt Lake City for the Utes. So, yeah, I think he'll be a fan favorite down there.
Excellent. Well, Benjamin, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate taking the time to teach us a little bit about Krstowiak. You know, it's funny. We see numbers and we see some highlight clips, but there's always something we learn from these kind of interviews, which is why I've always tried to do them whenever we've gotten a new player. So I really appreciate you coming on and teaching us more about Cam.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it as well.
Thank you. Well, Iona fans know I was really excited when we landed Stetson transfer Wizzo Panzo not too long ago. And of course, he's actually joining his friend Joel Brown on the Gales. So it'll be nice to have a pure point guard playing with a guy who is known as just this ridiculous knockdown shooter. But Panzo's more than that. He averaged 8.6 points, 4.6 boards a game, an incredible 2.83 assist to turnover ratio as well. With all of this in mind, I wanted to bring in someone who's seen Panzo in action. So now we welcome Daytona Beach News Journal sports writer Chris Boyle to the podcast. Chris, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Happy to be there.
Well, when you think of Panzo, of course, the thing that jumps out at you, 47% from three. As someone who watched him play this past season, you're actually surprised when it doesn't go in, right?
Yeah, I think it was a bit more consistent this year for sure. I mean, you look at his career numbers, and that 47% is a gigantic jump. I mean, his highest career percentage before this year was 43%, and that was only on 65 attempts. This year is on 162. So that shooting stroke really took a big step forward this year. And yeah, there were times during the middle of the season where he was just, you know, consistently knocking down shots and had some big performances. You know, you go back to a game he made. They played against an NAIA program called Weber International. He was 10 of 19 from three in that particular game. It was the most points he scored. He was 6 for 8 from 3-point range against North Alabama in the A-Sun. He was 5 for 6 against Ryder out of the MAAC. So that'll certainly be confidence inspiring for Iona. He's got two games against teams in Iona's league too. He played against Ryder and Niagara across the pond in Ireland earlier this year. So there'll be some, you know, some film, some scouting that those teams have done on him. And, you know, the fact that he's gotten an opportunity to play against them will help for familiarity's sake. He had 15 points against Ryder and 6 against Niagara.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you have someone who shoots like this and yet he averages less than 10 points a game, obviously the offense is not running through him. So tell us about the makeup of Stetson this past season.
So Stetson this year, very guard heavy. And you know, Weza plays kind of the, you know, stretch four role, I think is kind of the way I would look at it. He's, you know, 6'7", 200 pounds, plays on a smaller ball team. Jalen Blackman and Stephen Swenson kind of ran the offense. Swenson as the what Donnie Jones would call the quarterback of the offense. You know, he was the one that was running everything as the point guard. Blackman was their leading scorer, was an all first team A-Sun player. And then Panzo was definitely a guy that would get opportunities to knock down shots. You know, when he would be a guy that to me is almost a specialist at 3&D, you know, a three-point shooting specialist. You look at his stats this season, he took 202 field goal attempts, 162 of them were 3-point shots. Mm. So you're getting a guy that's going to be around the line, you know, in the corners, finding spaces to get himself free and to let it go, catch and shoot. So I think that's really what you're getting at out of him offensively. But as the team went, it went through Blackman and it went through Swenson when they were going at their best rate. This was Stetson's best season in a long, long time. They won 19 games this year. Was they won 17 games this year. Their most successful campaign since 2001. They beat Florida State this year and South Florida, two much more high profile programs statewide. So, you know, overall they had a really, really strong season. And I would say that Panzo was definitely a part of it. This was easily his most starts in a season. He started 30 of the 31 games he played. Compared to that, he started 14 games the previous three seasons.
Mm. Okay, I want to ask you two quick questions based on that. You said he was kind of playing a stretch four. Was that based on need? Was Stetson just thin in the front court, or just that was a system?
I think it was more based on system. I mean, Donnie okay. Jones, his teams have always had good guard play, and the A-Sun is a very guard-heavy league. So I don't think it's necessarily only based on need. They did have some size. They had Mohamedou Diawara, who was 6'10", 250. They had Josh Smith in the power forward spot at 6'8", 217. So they were able to kind of stretch him out because it was what he did well, and it would get some of the other bigs in the league to have to come defend the three-point line as well. So I think that's more or less a design of the offense and the design of, you know, what Donnie Jones envisions out of how Stetson should play in the A-Sun.
Mm. Okay, and then I see, 2.83 assist-to-turnover ratio. So obviously he's not sloppy with the ball, and it sounds like he can play anywhere from the two to the four.
Yeah, I think he's probably best suited in the three, you know, the three role would be my guess, just based on size. One thing that I've spoken to Stetson about when it comes to Panzo though is consistency. He's a guy that's not necessarily going to wow you other than the 3-point shot. I think that's certainly the number is obviously eye catching. He would have been one of the highest had he taken more attempts. I think he would have been one of the highest 3-point shooters in the country. Yep. I have to see what exactly his rate would be, but I mean, 47% is obviously a spectacular number. But you know, high basketball IQ, doesn't make a lot of mistakes, knows where to be, you know, in terms of the offense and the rotation and getting himself into spots to let that shot go. So I think those are things that are being harped on as positives for him, that he is not going to be a guy that ever really costs you anything on the floor as far as, you know, mental errors and even the turnovers. I mean, they're just really not a part of his game.
Hmm. Can you talk about his defensive abilities a bit?
Yeah, he can guard multiple spots. I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, he's again, a guy with some good length at 6'7", 200 pounds. Athleticism, I think he's a decent athlete. I think he's capable of guarding, you know, the two, three, certainly the four spots, maybe not in the post, but you know, if there's going to be an equal stretch four, I think he's capable to get out to the 3-point line. But yeah, I think that helps him, especially if you're going to be playing any teams with small ball systems. I think he's a guy that can get out there and cover a driving guard.
Okay, so now he's joining a complete overhaul of an Iona program and Coach Tobin Anderson, who became sort of a household name in March. Anderson's expected to have the Gales playing high tempo, a lot of scoring, pressure defense, high IQ style play. It just sounds like Panzo is a perfect fit for that system. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the A-Sun is a league, from what I've, well, all the times I've covered, you will see some games up there in the 80s and the 90s. I mean, there are some, you know, Stetson has not been a traditionally good defensive team. They were much better this year, as you would expect, given their record. This is a team that has an opportunity to go up and down the floor. And, you know, if you've got guys that can drive and kick, I mean, Panzo is going to be a guy that will knock down shots. And I think that's really what his main focus is going to be on, is just having that opportunity to find, you know, room on the court and then take advantage of other guys drawing defenders away from him and burying jump shots.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier, you know, he'd be playing with his longtime friend Joel Brown. They played in Canada together. And now Brown is that pure point guard who's going to drive and dish. And now you're going to have these two who have probably have like their own little language that they share or knowledge of each other or where, you know, so I get the feeling Brown's going to know where Panzo is on the floor at all times. And just, he's going to be one of those guys who drives in, draws two guys on him and kicks to an open Panzo. I just feel like we're going to see that over and over and over again this year.
I think so too. I mean, yeah. And it helps that you've got a guy that has just a ton of experience. He's played 120 games.
Yep.
You know, that experience is extremely valuable. He's played four full NCAA Division I seasons. So you're getting a guy that you know what he is coming in. You know he can help you. You know he can start. You know, whether he starts is up to, you know, Anderson, obviously, but he has the capability of starting, and he's also been happy to be a player off the bench, you know, and to contribute when called upon. His second 2 years, he only had four starts among the 56 games he played, but he still averaged 18 minutes, you know, 16 minutes a game. So he would still come in and give you meaningful reps and meaningful knockdown shots when called upon. So he's a guy that's going to have some versatility, whether he starts or not.
And so I've been doing these interviews all off season thus far with all of these guys that Iona has been bringing in, having replaced the entire roster. And I always wrap up by asking this one simple question. Why will Iona fans love him?
Well, I think they're going to like that he's consistent. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, that you're going to know what you're getting when Panzo steps on the floor. He's a guy that, you know, is well respected. He was well liked by coaches and by teammates. You know, he's intelligent. He's already graduated from Stetson University. He's got the high basketball IQ, like I mentioned before. If you're a fan of the three ball, you're going to like this guy. He's going to hit some shots for you. And a guy that, you know, on any given night can go off and just bury 3-point shots. He's going to be an important and potentially integral piece to your guys' puzzle.
That sounds great. And like I told you, I was excited when we got him, and I'm more excited now after talking to you. and I think Iona fans will be too. So this is why we have you on. So I really appreciate you coming on to talk about Wizza with us, and look forward to a great year with him, and I hope you keep an eye on him, and I hope we catch up again down the line.
Perfect. Thanks again for having me on, and best of luck to the Gales this coming season.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks again to our guests for stopping by and dropping knowledge. So good to hear about new Gales that we haven't seen in action from those who have. It's just about summertime here on the pod, but we're not cooling down as we hit the stretch run of season 3. Catch you next time, and thanks for listening, and go Gales.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the IonaHoops.com podcast. This podcast is a production of IonaHoops.com with publisher Guy Filotico. The opinions shared during this podcast are those of Guy Filotico, IonaHoops.com, and any featured guests. This podcast is not affiliated with Iona University Athletics or the university itself. Thank you for supporting IonaHoops.com.